I'm Christiane Conlon in Halifax. Welcome to Fear Itself. Today, we explore how fear is reflected in art and culture, the artistic creations of horror.
Why are you in that stupid place?
Ghost stories, haunted houses, horror movies, horror video games, zombies, demons, and ghosts. These frightening experiences and monsters of our times reflect both our personal and shared fears. They're symbols of what frighten us. And with the popularity of the genre, let's face it, we love being scared. And we seem to need to be scared, to have that visceral yet controlled experience of fright. What is it about these creations that draws some of us and repels others? This week on Fear Itself, the creations that reflect fear.
This is Fear Itself on CBC Radio 1.
Some people often wonder why, like so many slasher films, for instance, are centered around teenagers. And I think the reason for that is that all teenagers have a subconscious fear of death.
What is the hope? With a zombie, you can kill one, you can kill two, you can kill a horde, but there's more behind them, right? So it's like you're never going to win. It's completely the end of everything. There's no hope. And that's kind of the monster of the day, because we're kind of living in a world where things are really screwed.
I know that this experience has been designed for me, and I'm not really scared for me. I know that I'm not in danger. But because I'm not in danger, I can just let myself go and really feel the fright and really feel the fear that's coming to me.
Fear itself.
Video games embody the newest fusion of fear and play. Bernard Perron is not just an academic deconstructing the horror video game experience. He's a horror film fan, and he's a gamer, a horror video gamer. He both studies the genre and plays inside it.
When have you been scared the last time in your life? Me? Video game. So why do we have pleasure to be scared in cinema or in movie or when we read a book? The bound experience of fear. I know that this experience has been designed for me, and I'm not really scared for me. I know that I'm not in danger. But because I'm not in danger, I can just let myself go and really feel the fright and really feel the fear that's coming to me. So then we can enjoy, because we know that this experience have been designed for us, and then that we're safe, and then we can have fun doing it. So that's how you can really now enjoy the fact that you're scared, and because you're inside the world, the scary world or the dark world.
And you know about this world personally because you study this from a gamer's perspective. So could you tell me what your favorite horror video game is to play?
Well, I wrote a book about a series called Silent Hill. So Silent Hill 1 came in 99, and it changed the way video games look at horror. We have a genre called survival horror that have been came in 96 with a game called Resident Evil, which is a zombie game where you're stuck in a mansion and you have to fight zombie. But with Silent Hill, suddenly you're stuck with a character that don't really know what's happening to him. You get to a town which is full of fog, so you don't really see something when it's daytime. And the world changed suddenly to this nightmarish dark world when it's very dark, and then you don't see anything. And you're facing monster, and you get a flashlight. So suddenly you're really alone in the dark. And in Silent Hill, my flashlight really become my flashlight. So I've never been as scared as I was in Silent Hill, and when I played the game in 99, I knew that I wanted to understand, because I'm studying games from a player perspective, from a gamer perspective, because I really want to understand what's happening to me and how this experience is created through video game, which is a new way to put us in relation with image and sound.
Why are survival themes so important in horror video games?
Or survivor team, or the main team of a video game. When you play Mario, when you play Zelda, when you play any game, you have to survive. It could be a first-person shooter. It could be any game. So this is the main theme of video game. The only big difference with survival horror compared to first-person shooter, for example, where you get all those weapons and all those ammunition to really shoot around. But with survival horror games, suddenly they put you with almost no ammunition, almost no health pack. So you really have to survive and be careful. It changed the way you experience games because suddenly you're not in power, you're vulnerable, and you really have to feel and make sure that you stay alive.
How do horror video games make use of uncertainty?
What do you mean uncertainty? Because game is all about uncertainty. When I play a game, if the game is too easy, it's not a game anymore. So Silent Hill is based on uncertainty, which is on the ludic level, and uncertainty on the narrative level. Because the good thing with Silent Hill, Silent Hill 1, but Silent Hill 2 is a masterpiece too. In Silent Hill, the series, the character are always psychologically not well. So you don't really know your character. You don't know how they live their experience. And when the world, like I was saying, in Silent Hill, the world is foggy or the world is dark. But when you fall to this nightmarish world, it's always through the character, through the psychology of the character. So you don't really know if it's real or if it's a dream. So again, we're falling in this uncertainty because you're not sure if that's happening for real. You're living through it, but you don't know. So there's this they bring this narrative uncertainty to the experience, which is totally amazing.
So the genre then is evolving. Do you think, with whatever way it evolves, that the video horror game experience is going to replace the actual cinematic experience?
No, it's too, you know, the death of cinema has been announced since a long time. To play a game, you need to be in shape, you need to be in a mood, you need to want to do something. When I listen to a movie, I just sit down and I enjoy looking at what the character will do. I'm still, cognitively speaking, very active. But in a game, you really have to be active physically and then literally to control a character. So it's two different experiences. I still go to the movie, I listen a lot to a movie, I read books. But the experience are different. When I play a game, it's more about me facing this zombie invasion. So it's three different experiences.
It's a very personal way of facing your fears, very private, a real intimacy.
It is. Yeah. I'll tell you, I don't know how you play Silent Hill or play any horror games, but if you do it, that's what I'm always saying. When you play a horror game, do it like you should do, that is, playing in the dark with your headphone on and alone in your living room, and suddenly it changed. If you play in the bright light in the afternoon, it's not the same experience that if you're really alone in the dark facing your own fear. So yes, it is really personal.
Bernard Perron is a professor of cinema at the University of Montreal. He was co-editor of the Video Game Theory Reader 1. He also edited Horror Video Games, Essays on the Fusion of Fear and Play.
Play with us.
This is Fear Itself on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius Satellite 159. I'm Christiane Conlon.
Fear Itself.
Last week on Fear Itself, we talked to novelist Andrew Piper about writing horror stories, and somehow the topic of zombies came to life.
It's no accident that the monster of the moment is the zombie. We have The Walking Dead, an incredibly popular TV show. Unthinkable, really, on TV 3 or 4 years ago when you think of it. A zombie TV show is a hit. And yet we have that. And I commuted on the subway to CBC this morning, and the subway stations in Toronto were packed. But we didn't look at each other. You know, it really was a tension-filled moment in a zombie movie just before the creatures are discovered and start, you know, munching on us. Or that is to say, we were the zombies on the platform, not looking at each other, kind of waiting in silence to move onto something we could devour. So it seems to me a right time for zombies because we don't talk to our neighbors as much. We feel kind of alienated. Technology, I think, as much as we're connected, we're disconnected. So those metaphors, those monsters, those aren't the product of Hollywood. They come from us.
Zombies everywhere, even on the Toronto subway. If you pay the slightest bit of attention to pop culture these days, you'll know that rotting flesh and an unquenchable hunger for brains is the genre du jour. Donna Davies is a Halifax-based filmmaker who seems to gravitate towards fear. Two of her latest works saw her setting her sights directly on the monsters that have been created by Hollywood. Her documentary, Pretty Bloody, looks into the world of female-generated horror, while Zombie Mania looks at the proliferation of zombies in popular culture. I met Donna Davies at Strange Adventures, her local comic book store in Halifax, where we were surrounded by creepy popular culture.
Welcome to a night of total terror.
I interviewed George Romero, who was really responsible for the look of the zombie that we know. He talked about evolving a zombie. Like, the first time you see the zombies, you know, they made them very simple. But they based all of it on true photographs. Tom Savini, one of the major players in George Romero's films, he was, you know, he was in Vietnam, and he saw dead bodies. He collected photographs, and he was hugely into making things look real. So he really worked with the color palette to make zombies look like a real rotting body.
The dead who live on living flesh. The dead whose haunted souls hunt the living. The living whose bodies are the only food for these ungodly creatures.
Why zombies now? Why are zombies so popular?
I think that the zombie represents not just the whole our fear of death and decay and all this sort of stuff coming straight out and hitting us in the face. Like, if you could dig up the graveyard where we're all going, we'd all come back looking kind of like that, so we relate. But the whole idea of having no soul is very compelling to people today, because we're living in a soulless society.
Ken, are you there, Ken?
This building has just exploded. Oh, my God! Ah! Hundreds of people are getting killed down there.
What is the hope? You can kill a vampire. You can stab it through the heart with a, you know, silver bullet, or do whatever. But with a zombie, you can kill one, you can kill two, you can kill a horde, but there's more behind them, right? So it's like you're never going to win. It's completely the end of everything. There's no hope. And that's kind of the monster of the day, because we're kind of living in a world where things are really screwed for, in many people's, you know, I guess, estimation of where things have gone. It just makes sense that it would be, you know, a horrible plague-like thing that would get us all, and we can't trust our neighbor, we can't trust our dog, we can't trust anybody. And it's just, I think, scarier than anything else.
The zombie now is so popular. Zombies have always appealed to males. What's the appeal to women, the zombie appeal for women?
Well, I think that the dynamics have completely changed. I've talked to people that make video games, and zombie video games, and they're really popular with women. In video games, you don't have to feel guilty about killing hordes of zombies. You can feel really good about it. So it allows, you know, women to play into this world where they can become a zombie, dress up, go on zombie walks. I think it's the dynamics, because the zombie is the monster of the day, and because in this day and age, the female demographic for understanding and love of horror is grown, then it makes it, I think, just a thing that's happening because of the times. So it changed from just a certain amount of really cool women loving horror, because they understood that the female heroines in these shows often had traits well beyond the female heroine or romantic comedy, where the true horror really is. in other words, it's much scarier to be told that you have to get married and have this kind of life, and if you don't, you're, you know, useless, than it is to show a woman surviving a huge ordeal and grabbing a gun and taking her, you know, her life in her hands, and often escaping in very many cases, especially as horror progressed.
Can you talk a little bit more about how the zombie evokes fear compare to ghosts or demons or witches?
Ghosts and demons and witches and all those supernatural forces are something that, you know, they can still evoke fear, but the fear is less accessible to us as people. We cannot completely identify with a ghost. You know, the ghost is ethereal and it vanishes and it's not really, you know, it's not really able to do anything but scare us. Ghosts rarely grab onto us and suck out our brains or anything like that. Whereas a zombie, when we look across, we see something that looks just like us. We can identify. The body parts are still there and it's in complete daylight. You know, it's not, it doesn't have to be late. It doesn't have to be late at night to get eaten by a zombie. It can be, you can be having your bagel and your coffee and boom, your brains are sucked out. And you know, you can be walking down the street 4 o'clock in the afternoon and buddy in front of you is walking a little weird and it just starts to occur to you, like, you know, it's happened to me many times. Wow, I don't like that guy's walk. There's something a little weird or off about that person. And it could be at the airport, it could be at the supermarket. And it's much more terrifying because we can identify with that body.
Stop it! You're ignorant.
They're coming for you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're acting like a child.
Look, they're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
So is it the zombie itself that we're afraid of, or what it represents, or is it a twofold scare?
It's a twofold scare because the zombie's really us. You know, and so we're afraid of everyone else and we're afraid of ourselves, and, you know, mostly we're afraid of ourselves. So, I mean, I guess we're all afraid of the point where we're rotting under the ground and bodily fluids are seeping out everywhere. And, you know, our souls have gone and left our bodies and we're just shells. And the whole idea that, you know, everywhere you turn for safety, there's another zombie hiding. You know, the fact that they're sauntering and slow moving because their bones are rotting and they're, you know, there's no tissue left there. They're, you know, the ligaments are torn and all this sort of thing. It kind of makes them even scarier. Some people believe that the fast-moving zombie is a really good addition to the arsenal of the zombie character traits. But those people are few and far between. Let's get real, right? There's something wrong with them.
Rule number one for surviving Zombieland: cardio. When the virus struck, for obvious reasons, the first ones to go were the fatties. Poor fat bastard.
The zombie is a metaphor. The zombie represents our deepest fear, the fact that from the moment that we have a perception of being an individual in childhood, we're hit with the inevitable idea of death. It's the biggest fear that exists in mankind. People are more afraid of death than any other thing. They try to run from it. Some people try to deal with it by watching a lot of death and destruction. But inevitably, it's where we're all going, and it's what we all face. So it's the biggest fear that mankind has. To take your dead relatives, so to speak, in terms of maybe what zombies represent, and pull them out of the ground and slap them up in front of your eyes is just a reminder of where we're all going to go. And so it makes you, I think, a little bit more sensitive to what you're doing with your life, where you are, and what's going to happen when you die.
What if you died, but you came back to life as a zombie? Would you make the best of your new life? Or would you give in to those old zombie urges?
You know, George Romero said the last time I interviewed him, they're not going to be popular forever. I mean, come on. Maybe they are.
Donna Davies' films include Zombie Mania and Pretty Bloody, the story of female-generated horror. Donna lives in Halifax.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a horror movie. Number one, you can never have sex.
So is there a method to the madness? Do horror movies follow an unspoken set of rules in their attempts to scare the living daylights right out of us?
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back, because you won't be back.
I'm getting another beer. You want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
As a movie critic in Nova Scotia, Mark Palermo has seen his share of scary movies. Earlier this year, Mark got to see a scary story of his own up on the silver screen. His movie Detention, is the story of a high school population in the grip of a serial killer. Mark Palermo knows horror movies from both sides of the camera. So we asked him to meet us in the horror section of Video Difference, one of the few video stores left in his town.
Okay, so here we are in the horror section, and it's an impressive horror section. We have monsters and slasher movies, spook specters and ghosts, supernatural. Stephen King has his own section, zombies, masters of horror. Okay, I could go on and on. So I'm wondering, when people come here or go to the theater, what are people seeking from a horror film?
I think they're seeking an element of surprise, kind of like, you know, when you get on a roller coaster, they're looking for, you know, the thrills that in a sense I think are kind of frowned upon by society in a way. And so horror kind of has that outsider element to it where it's anti-establishment in a way, and there's kind of a thrill from that. So they're kind of testing their own limits, I think. You know, they know watching a movie is safe, but there's kind of like a sense of danger to that anyway.
So talking about the audience, what role does horror play in our actual lives?
Well, people have anxieties, and horror is about the unknown. And the ultimate unknown is death. And everybody dies, but for society to function, most people never think about death. And, you know, that's how you go on with your job. You become a productive member of society by just kind of putting this out of your mind. So that's why kind of horror is, I think, kind of frowned upon, because people aren't supposed to become preoccupied with these things. Some people often wonder why, like, so many slasher films, for instance, are centered around teenagers. And I think the reason for that is that all teenagers have a subconscious fear of death. And the reason I think that is because so many, like, first things happen when you're a teenager. You know, if I don't go on a date this Friday night, I'll never get a date again. If I don't go to the dance with this person, I'll never dance again in my life. I have to have, like, sex this week or no one will ever have sex with me again. So it's kind of this feel like, you know, it's now or never for anything. And that's why I think, you know, teenagers and horror movies are kind of such this perfect match, because you know, there's this kind of subconscious fear of dying all the time that really works that way.
What about the people who fear and loathe it, who are repulsed by it?
I mean, I think it's fair. Not everybody likes everything. You know, I definitely know people who don't like horror movies, and I can understand why people don't want to dwell on those things.
Why?
Well, there's obviously, like, repulsive imagery in horror films a lot of the time, which is off-putting to some people. And a lot of people view, like, horror movies are often escapism, but they're not escapism in the way that a romantic comedy is, which is, you know, just a way to sort of forget about your life. I think that a lot of people with movies just want, like, the pure escapism and not to have to kind of, like, bring that back to themselves in a way that a good horror movie would do, which makes you reconsider the people around you and the fears and anxieties that you have.
So you recently tweeted that the only reason to make a movie is to create something that's never been made before. So when it comes to horror films, what do you think is missing?
Now, the thing about horror movies is that, you know, they have often conventions to them. They can be cliched. You know, it's always the virgin who survives. There's always some wise old guy saying, "Don't go in there," you know. So there's conventions to horror films. Now, the thing with cliches is they do serve a purpose, of course, which is that there's certain stories that, you know, as humans we need to tell ourselves over and over again, and that's kind of why they become popular. That's like Rocky is a conventional story, and there's been many, many movies made like Rocky, but I think it's just because, you know, we like to hear that kind of underdog rise to the top story, and people need to, you know, keep telling each other these things. It's like, you know, campfire tales in a way. But the thing with cliches in horror movies is that, you know, they kind of ruin the sense of surprise that becomes really scary. But I think that for horror fans, once you kind of pick up on these cliches and you kind of become like experts in the genre, you sort of become too comfortable with it. It's like you're like experts of these horror movies. So it's like you're kind of living in this whole other world that the established culture kind of frowns upon, and then you sort of become an expert of it. So I think it sort of works that way, but that can be counterproductive too.
How?
It's counterproductive to the movies itself, which is that, you know, horror movies become fun when you realize the conventions of them, but they lose their ability to pull the rug out from beneath you and to, you know, show you things that you've never been seen before, to scare you in new ways. Some horror movies still do that, but the conventional ones kind of are based upon cliches. And sometimes it's just laziness. Sometimes it's done out of love of the genre.
Okay, so if you take a really great horror movie, just the whole horror experience, do you think there's a catharsis there for the audience?
Yeah, I absolutely think there's a catharsis. Sometimes it can kind of be a destructive thing, I think, to a person's mindset. You know, I mean, like I said, like everybody is going to die, but most people don't think about that. So horror movies just kind of give us an outlet to kind of deal with these emotions in a safe context of watching a movie.
Mark Palermo's latest movie is called Detention. He lives in Halifax, where he has worked as a film critic, guerrilla filmmaker, and a freelance writer. You may fear and loathe the horror genre. Movies, video games, zombies. But nothing captures and reflects our shared fears more than the art and culture of our time. Hope and fear, two things that unite people. As peculiar as it is to say this out loud, maybe zombies and the horror genre as a whole embody these two qualities, giving us experiences where we can viscerally feel fear in a secure way, but at the same time, feel some hope about overcoming that fear. Next week on Fear Itself, childhood fears.
I can remember one incident where my grandmother was out cleaning away the leaves in the ditch, and there was a garter snake, and so she proceeded to take a shovel and thrash at this snake until she completely severed it, and that solidified my fear.
Fear Itself is on the web. You can find us at fearitself@cbc.ca. On Twitter, we're at @cbcfearitself. Fear Itself is produced by Kent Hoffman and technical producer Bill Roach. I'm Christiane Conlon. Fear Itself.